Hello, and welcome to the October IASB Update Podcast. My name is Neely Shaw, and I am the Executive Technical Director at the IASB. And today, I'm joined by the Chair of the IASB, Andreas Barco. Welcome, Andreas. We are here to share with you the highlights of our October IASB meetings. In our meeting this month, the IASB discussed a range of topics and made a couple of milestone decisions. Without further ado, let's kick off the updates with our disclosure initiative projects. Andreas, could you start us off with the Targeted Standards Level Review project?
Sure. Thanks, Neely. Just to provide a bit of background, our Targeted Standard Level Review of Disclosure Projects, or as we would like to call it, the TSLR projects, as we like acronyms, is a project that the IASB worked on with the aim to help address disclosure problems by improving the IASB's approach to developing and drafting disclosure requirements. In March 2021, the IASB released an exposure draft detailing a new approach to developing and drafting disclosure requirements, which shifted the compliance focus from detailed items of information to disclosure objectives. In other words, we tried to promote a move away from a checklist-based approach to disclosures. As a pilot, we looked at disclosure requirements in two standards, which are IFRS 13, our standard on fair value measurement, and IAS 19, employee benefits. During this month's meeting, the IASB decided to use the proposed methodology for developing disclosure requirements in future standard setting activities. Most importantly, thinking about disclosures at the same time as recognition and measurement considerations, engaging investors to understand what disclosures they want, why they want it, and how they will use it, and thinking about the digital consumption of those disclosures at the same time as the development of the disclosure proposals. The IASB also decided on an approach to drafting disclosure requirements in future standard setting. The IASB will provide context setting, non-prescriptive overall disclosure objectives that describe the overall information needs of users to financial statements, require companies to comply with specific disclosure objectives that describe the detailed information needs of users of financial statements, support specific disclosure objectives with explanations of the assessments that users make that rely on information disclosed supplying the specific disclosure objectives, and last, use prescriptive language when referring to items of information that an entity should disclose to meet a specific disclosure objective. The methodology for developing and drafting disclosure requirements that we just mentioned will be published on the IFRS Foundation website. In addition, the IASB decided not to proceed with any further work on the disclosure requirements of IFRS 13 and IAS 19.
Thank you, Andreas. Let's move on to our other disclosure initiative project. That is the Subsidiaries Without Public Accountability project. This project aims to reduce costs and simplify preparation of subsidiaries' financial statements by permitting eligible subsidiaries to apply IFRS accounting standards with reduced disclosure requirements as proposed in the draft standard. So what that means is that these subsidiaries would use the recognition and measurement requirements in full IFRS, but disclose a reduced set of disclosures in their standalone subsidiary financial statements. In June, the IASB agreed to proceed with its proposal for a new accounting standard as set out in the exposure draft, Subsidiaries Without Public Accountability Disclosures. So the IASB is now in the redeliberation phase of this project. At this month's meeting, the IASB discussed three key aspects of the draft standards. First, the IASB agreed to confirm the objective of the standard as proposed in the exposure draft, which is to permit eligible subsidiaries to apply the disclosure requirements in the draft standard, and as I mentioned, the recognition, measurement, and presentation requirements in IFRS accounting standards. With regards to the approach in developing the disclosure requirements, the IASB agreed to ensure that the language used in the disclosure requirements is the same as the language in full IFRS accounting standards. And third, on the structure of the standard, the IASB agreed two things. First, to omit the appendix proposed in the exposure draft, which set out disclosure requirements in other IFRS accounting standards that do not apply to an entity applying the standard for reduced disclosures. And second, to replace the footnotes with cross-references to disclosure requirements in other IFRS accounting standards that remain applicable, located under each IFRS accounting standard subheading within the main body of the standard. So, Andreas, we have one other major standard-setting project that the board discussed in October. That is the rate-regulated activities project. Would you like to give us an update on that one?
With pleasure, Nelly. With regards to this project, this month, the ISB decided that the forthcoming IFRS accounting standard on rate-regulated activities would retain the definition of allowable expense as proposed in the exposure draft, but it would clarify the treatment of allowable expenses based on benchmarks and include examples to help entities identify differences in timing in those cases. It also decided to retain the proposals for an entity to account for regulatory assets or regulatory liabilities arising from differences between the regulatory recovery period and the asset's useful life if the entity has concluded that its regulatory capital base and its property, plant and equipment have a direct relationship. And to help in determining whether an entity's regulatory capital base and its property, plant and equipment have a direct relationship, the ISB agreed to include guidance in the standard. In cases where there is no direct relationship between the two, the ISB decided to require disclosures that would enable users to understand the reasons behind such a conclusion. Moving on to our research project updates, Nelly, we saw both the goodwill and impairment and the equity method projects return to the board table this month, didn't we? Would you let us know how those discussions went?
Absolutely. So let's start with the goodwill and impairment project. Last month, you may recall, the ISB made some big decisions about disclosures about business combinations. This month, the ISB focused on the subsequent accounting for goodwill. Specifically, it discussed all of the information the staff pulled together from its past outreach, research, and analysis on this topic. The purpose of this meeting was to see if the ISB members needed any more information to enable it to make a decision about whether to retain the current impairment-only model or whether there is sufficient evidence to justify exploring the reintroduction of amortization. And I stress the word exploring, because even if the ISB decided there is sufficient evidence today to move away from the impairment-only model, it is unclear whether an operational amortization model can be developed. The ISB will likely make this decision in November, so stay tuned for that. So moving on to the second research project that the ISB discussed this month, that is the equity method project. Just as a reminder, the objective of this project is to explore whether the ISB can address application questions on the equity method of accounting by identifying and explaining principles in IAS 28, Investments in Associates and Joint Ventures. During this month's meeting, the ISB was updated on the project's overall progress, and the ISB agreed to continue the equity method project with its current objective and approach. This was an involved discussion, however, because it has been quite tricky to find a path forward on this project based on the existing principles in IAS 28, and to do so in a way that is useful for users of financial statements. So we'll hear more of the ISB's discussions on the application questions within the scope of this project at future meetings, but with further touch points about whether the benefits of progressing this project outweigh the costs. Now let's move on, Andreas, to the ISB's discussions on the post-implementation review of the classification and measurement requirements in IFRS 9. Before we turn things over to you, I just wanted to remind our listeners that a post-implementation review is not a standard-setting project. However, matters may be identified in a PIR for which the ISB may decide to do standard-setting. And this is the case for three topics that the ISB discussed in October. The first is equity instruments and other comprehensive income. The second is electronic cash transfers. And the third is contractual cash flow characteristics of financial assets. The ISB also discussed in October the topic of business model assessments and decided not to take any further action on this matter, on the matters identified in the PIR in relation to the business model requirements in IFRS 9. So, Andreas, over to you on the three topics for which the ISB is doing further work based on the outcome of the post-implementation review.
Thanks, Nelly. Let me start with a first topic you mentioned, equity instruments and other comprehensive income, or OCI. The ISB considered feedback on the requirements in IFRS 9 financial instruments relating to equity instruments for which an entity has elected to present fair value changes in OCI. After careful consideration, the ISB decided that there was no new evidence to justify making changes to those requirements. However, the ISB acknowledged that the current requirements may not communicate all useful information about such investments. Therefore, to improve transparency and provide users of financial information with more comprehensive information about the performance of these investments since acquisition, the ISB tentatively decided to amend IFRS 7 financial instruments disclosures to require disclosure of, first, the aggregated fair value of equity investments for which the OCI presentation option is applied at the end of the reporting period, and second, changes in fair value recognized in other comprehensive income during the period. In addition, the ISB asked the staff to explore whether an illustrative example such as a reconciliation from the opening balance to the closing balance in OCI could be provided in the proposed amendments. Second, then, on electronic cash transfers. This topic arose from a submission to the Interpretations Committee on the timing of the recognition of trade receivables and the recognition of cash received via an electronic transfer system as settlement for that receivable. In light of this submission and feedback of the PIR of the classification and measurement requirements in IFRS 9 in September, the IASB decided to explore narrow scope standard setting. This month, the ISB tentatively decided to develop an accounting policy choice to allow an entity to derecognize a financial liability before it delivers cash on the settlement date when specified criteria are met. At a future meeting, the ISB will continue its discussions on such a potential accounting policy choice, including the scope of settlement transactions for which an entity could make the election. Thirdly, on contractual cash flow characteristics of financial assets. This month, we focused on the disclosure requirements that would complement the clarifying amendments the ISB tentatively decided to make in September. The proposals would require companies to disclose for each class of financial assets amortized cost or fair value through other comprehensive income and financial liabilities at amortized cost. First, a qualitative description of contractual terms that could change the timing or amount of contractual cash flows. Second, quantitative information about the range of changes to contractual cash flows that could result from these contractual terms. And third, the gross carrying amount of financial assets and amortized cost of financial liabilities subject to these contractual terms. Furthermore, the ISB tentatively decided on a modified retrospective application of the clarifying amendments, which means that entities would not be required to restate comparative information. The effective date will be decided after consultation, but early application would be permitted. As a next step, for all three of these proposed narrow scope amendments to IFRS 9, that is, disclosures on equity instruments accounting for at fair value OCI, electronic cash transfers, and contractual cash flow characteristics, we expect the staff to request permission to begin the balloting process for a single exposure draft by the end of this year. Our thinking is that a single exposure draft would make it easier for stakeholders to provide feedback. So that's all. Back to you, Nili.
Thank you, Andreas. So just a few more topics that we covered in October. The staff first came back to the board to discuss the provisions project. And as a reminder, this is a targeted project focusing on three aspects in IAS 37. This month, the ISB focused on discount rates used in measuring provisions within the scope of IAS 37 and whether to develop proposals to specify whether the rate an entity uses to discount a provision should reflect non-performance risk, that is, the risk that the entity will not fulfill its obligation. The ISB will make a decision at a future meeting. In addition, the ISB finalized three agenda decisions from the Interpretations Committee. One is on multi-currency groups of insurance contracts, which encompasses IFRS 17 insurance contracts, and IAS 21, the effects of changes in foreign exchange rates. The second agenda decision was on special purpose acquisition companies accounting for warrants at acquisition. And the third agenda decision was on lesser forgiveness of lessee payments, which relates to IFRS 9 and IFRS 16. In addition, the ISB also decided to shorten the comment period on its forthcoming proposed IFRS taxonomy amendments to IAS 1 and IFRS 16 to 30 days instead of the usual 60 days. And the reason for this is that these proposals relate to narrow scope amendments and there are no significant changes to the taxonomy that is being made. In addition, this timing would enable the IASB to publish its annual compilation of taxonomy updates in early 2023. So just a reminder, please keep a lookout for the proposed taxonomy update in November, and please share your feedback with us.
Great. I should also add, last but not least, Emmanuel Faber, chair of the International Sustainability Standards Board, joined the IASB this month to share an update on the ISSB's decisions on its exposure draft S1 on general sustainability-related disclosure requirements and S2 on climate, as well as their upcoming consultation on agenda priorities. This update mirrors a session that I had with the ISSB in September. Both sessions are part of our work to share information between the two boards and facilitate connectivity, complementing the work that's being done at the staff level.
Thank you, Andreas. So that is all from us this month. You can also catch up on previous episodes of this and the IFRS Interpretations Committee on our website, as well as our YouTube channel and Spotify. For the latest developments, make sure to subscribe on our website. And if you like this podcast, please do take some time to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast player. And remember to tune in at the next installment. Thank you so much.